News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 807-251-343-0106. We'll get to your texts here as we go along here this morning, especially this hour in the 8 o'clock hour. We've got time for all that. And, of course, if you want to ring in, you can do that, too. We can have time to turn up your voice. Same number, 251-343-0106.
Yeah, and, you know, the elections this year in Alabama, specifically in our neck of the woods and some of these other districts, they're kind of like the World Cup. They're just going to go on and on and on. You know, we had the primaries, and then yesterday the primary runoffs.
Yep.
With some heated races, a lot of mudslinging in those. Next, in August, we'll have the congressional primaries with no runoff, just winner advances, and then the general in November because of everything that's gone on in the courts and the back and forth there. So it's really just election year all year long. But it was good to finally put a bow on some of these that had become so heated.
I know. I think a lot of people felt that way, like enough is enough. And look at the low turnout, too, in Mobile.
Yeah, I saw
in Mobile County.
Lanyap posting about that. 7.2% turnout in Mobile County. That's what they had posted last night. I don't know if that had changed. One of the primary runoffs you had referenced that happened previously was about a 12% turnout. And that was really low.
Remember that was the last
time. Was that the last one?
Mm-hmm.
So even below that, 7.2%. And but, you know, I guess what gets me about the turnout is while those were primary runoffs yesterday, those basically decided who's going to have the seat. The Republicans are going to win a vast majority of the races around the state.
Yeah,
so
that was it. That was the election. Amazing importance. U.S. Senate seat. Who replaces Tuberville? That was up for grabs yesterday.
Yeah. AG, you got Lieutenant Governor,
AG, all important positions in the state of Alabama. All these big statewide elections. They were determined yesterday because the races in November are not going to be very close.
I forget who I was reading, and I need to find out exactly who it was. It was a good opinion piece yesterday, and now I apologize because I don't know. Oh, okay, it was Troy Carrico, yeah, who's been on this station plenty of times, of course, well-known in the veterans community. And, you know, U.S. Army, he spent more than two decades there. And we've talked with him on this station before, but he wrote an opinion piece and he was awfully upset that the Barry Moore and Jared Hudson race turned the way it did late. And one of the things he wrote in his opinion piece at 1819news.com, it's an obvious thing, I guess, but it really kind of struck me like, yeah, we need to do something about this, but I don't know if there's anything that can be done about this. Let me find the exact part of it here.
Sure.
About Barry Moore and Jared Hudson. He said, the air is thick with attack ads questioning service records in these final desperate hours before runoff voting ends. This is blue on blue fire, and it is devastating the very heart of our veteran community. Talking about the allegations that Congressman Moore's military service was somehow inadequate or didn't rise to the level of veteran that he was putting off out there.
Yep.
On the campaign trail.
Right.
And then Barry Moore, you know, he gave his service records out. He said, this is what it was. I never served in combat. I never said that I served in combat. And then you have Jared Hudson, who did serve in combat and served a lot. And, of course, former Navy SEAL. But what Carrico had to say here, he said, I speak with particular gravity because I consider Hudson a friend and fellow warrior. As an Army Ranger, I know the unique forge that shapes men who operate at the tip of the spear. He talked some about Hudson's military career. And then he also talked about faith. And he said, something deeper anchors us both, an allegiance that renders all earthly powers secondary. Our faith in Jesus Christ supersedes every other loyalty to the party, politician, or personal ambition. I would imagine if you asked Barry Moore, he would say the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, this race has taken a particularly foul turn in its 11th hour with the allegations of stolen valor. Both men served honorably. Moore's DD-214, or its functional equivalent, and his NGB 22 reflects a man who swore the oath and stood ready. Carrico said, I had personally reviewed Moore's documentation, and it is a bona fide statement of honorable service. To suggest otherwise does violence to the truth and to every guardsman and reservist who has ever stood the watch. But he said, I do not lay this at the feet of my brother Hudson as an act of malice. Warriors execute missions. They do not always choose the battlefield or the rules of engagement. And where he points the blame are political operatives. He said, what I see instead is the shadow of political operatives willing to use veterans as pawns in a larger game of domination over Alabama's political landscape. The timing, the framing, the deliberate attempt to discredit one veteran's service to elevate another is not a good look at all. Now, let me step away from Carrico's words here and say Hudson didn't do exactly a lot over these last couple of weeks to point the finger at political operatives. I mean, we heard the conversation he had with Dale Jackson.
Yeah.
He kind of left it hanging in the air, right?
Yeah.
But Carrico continued. He said, the damage is done. Seeds of suspicion have been sown among men who once trusted each other in the foxhole. When we begin to rank order of sacrifice to measure one man's boots against another's, we dishonor the oath we took. And the part that really got me here, and now I can't find it, but he basically said, or maybe it was another opinion piece I read, something that I said similarly yesterday. When you have candidates that are so close to equal in policy positions, where they stand on things that conservatives are pretty uniform in, then they have to start attacking each other. And this isn't just for that Senate race. It's for all the races in these primary runoffs and primary elections. When you're so alike in your voting, you're going to have to attack other parts of the candidate in order to differentiate yourself. But what that always comes down to is who's more Christian? Mm-hmm. Who's more of a military man? Mm-hmm. Who's more of this and that? And it really brings itself down into the weeds and is a bad look for either one or all people involved. I like that Carrico wrote that and posted it at 1819 News yesterday. It's well worth your read.
Yeah.
I read a lot of it right there, but I thought it was a good read.
Yeah, I'm glad he wrote that too, because I've been struggling with trying to figure out what bothered me about that so much. You know what I mean? Something irked me about it as well. We know Jared. We like Jared.
Mm-hmm. We know Barry.
Yeah, we know Barry. It seemed to stem, and this could have been the work of keen listening political operatives too. Moore may have said something in the past that they, a 5-yard penalty or something, that a little encroachment when you compare it to the actual facts.
Yeah.
Might have been something like that that set off this whole thing to question his valor.
And I wonder if in the end all of that worked against Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you make of the polling? I mean, of course you're going to have polls released that benefit your candidate to make things look as close as possible or like you have as big a lead as possible. But the polling we saw these last couple of months, with one poll that had Hudson up by 9 points, you had Moore up by 9 points, which ended up being much closer to the 11-point win that he ended up with yesterday.
Yeah.
But the polls were all over the map. I do wonder if here in these last couple weeks, if the way Moore played this whole thing, and there were plenty of people that were upset with the Hudson camp for making this as big an issue as it did, I wonder if that actually hurt his numbers a little bit. Not enough that he would have won, but that he may have had a little bit of a closer race last night.
Yeah, you wonder if it tarnished Hudson. Because one thing that Hudson could have done is simply talk about his own service and his own history and his own career.
Which he did for a vast majority of the campaign. That's
right. That probably would have been the right way to go. And maybe somebody got in his ear later on and said, you know, at this point, we gotta play this card. He could have just simply, and it's not only with the serving with the Navy SEALs, which is highly honorable, of course, but also and courageous, and go on and on about that. You know, the work he's done since with Covenant Rescue Group, involved in a recent arrest in
Monroe
County, here, just above us. So it's work that's been, you know, this is all to fight human trafficking. He's been a really good guy for a really long time. And he became a Navy SEAL when he was fairly young, maybe 21 or something like that. I mean, he was a SEAL early on. So he's devoted, he may be 39 now, 40 years old. He's devoted his lifetime to fighting and fighting for what's right, fighting for America, now fighting for kids, mm-hmm. young people. Many of them, sadly, maybe came across the border, you know, under the Biden administration, because we saw those numbers are staggering about mm-hmm. how many young people are, they can't find them.
Yeah.
I mean,
that
God knows who's in possession of them and what they're going through. I mean, God only knows, Joe Biden. But he's done so many good things. He could have rested on that and let the cards fall where they might. But
yeah. Like the political operatives, I mean, they come in, they say, I have all this experience. I've been in this game for so long. Yeah. You need to listen to me on this.
Right.
This will put your campaign over the top.
Maybe that happened, maybe that didn't, but we would suspect that.
It very possibly could.
Yeah.
But how about Trump picking up not just one win, but several last night in these primaries? You know, we had more than just in Alabama, but Barry Moore was another win for him. You had John Wall, who didn't enter the race for lieutenant governor until the very last day of qualifying.
You know, I forgot about that until you told me that this morning. It was like, yeah, you're right. And then he immediately got the endorsement from...
Yeah, it was pretty immediate once he jumped into the race.
Okay, and I think that in the end, I mean, Wes Allen was already holding public office.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John Wall was a public official, but... He was just working for the GOP.
Yeah, leading the ALGOP.
Yeah.
So he ended up winning by, you know, 14 points yesterday over Wes Allen for that lieutenant governor race.
Allen was also a no-show in a lot of different events where he could have stated his case. So I think he didn't do himself any favors by, you know, people just noticed that. It's not. It's almost like, well, you know, is it that big a deal not to show at a percentage of events, right? Where the other guy or the other candidates are showing, I think people notice that. Mm-hmm. It's like we've noticed you're absent. Why are you not here? Do you not respect us enough to allow us to be an audience so we can hear what you've got to say?
Especially probably in a race with as low of turnout as we had yesterday.
Sure.
That means you're getting some high propensity voters who really care about the details.
That's a great point. So you have people who do care more than a greater percentage that do care, and those the events that you decided not to attend. I think mm-hmm. that probably played a role.
Certainly could have. Attorney General race, you had Katherine Robertson, who defeated Jay Mitchell. That was an 10-point win for Robertson there. In the Ag Commissioner race, the local in this race, Christina Warner McInnes, she ran a really good race, but she ended up just falling a little short to Corey Hill.
Well, she was hoping that Bear Bryant and Shug Jordan would get her over the goal line.
Yeah. And
she was leaning a little heavy on them.
On those guys, yeah. And so Hill had 53% to McInnes' 46.7%. How about both incumbents that were running for Public Service Commission fall this cycle? One in the primary last month, but then Chris Beeker lost to Jim Ziegler yesterday. Ziegler headed back to Montgomery. He was the auditor for so long, and he won. That was maybe the tightest race of the night, 51.3% to 48.6%. I loved that text yesterday to Sean's show on Midday. Somebody texted and said, it's 2026, and I can't believe I'm voting for Jim Ziegler at the ballot box. He's been in politics for a while, but he was the outsider in this race, right? He was the outsider the entire time he was in Montgomery, even as auditor.
He's an outsider when he's inside. He's inside the studio, and he feels like he's kind of quirky and an outsider.
Yeah.
I think what you said, that rings true again, Dalton, with this. You had the low, for instance, in Mobile County, if it was, in fact, 7.2%, as Lanyap, I guess, mm-hmm. reported that. All right, you had the people that really, really were paying closer attention. They're the ones that showed up. What happened in Montgomery most recently with a Public Service Commission that was mm-hmm. never in the news? Suddenly they were in the news.
All over the news.
All over the news. People were dissatisfied that were paying attention. Only the people paying attention noticed that, got disgruntled to the point now. So are there three people on the Public Service Commission and two are
now
out?
Yeah, well, yeah, for now, but they're changing that. And that was a big part of that. They're going to add more members to the commission
and
have them chosen by the governor until we end up voting more in. But That was an office that you could almost hold for your entire life,
yep.
It seemed.
You're right.
Once you were an incumbent, you were locked in.
Suddenly, that's no longer the case. And what is the, I think a fair question, too, is on the text line, let us know, what is the state going to look like under Governor Tommy Tuberville?
Mm.
What will his, you know, do a bunch of executive orders, much like a Donald Trump. How will he change things? How will he change the tone or the business climate in the state of Alabama?
And, you know, that's not a massive presumption to say that he'll be governor. I mean, if he stays in the race, he will be governor. And he's going up against Doug Jones. What I'm wondering is, how many court dates is Tuberville going to have between now and November? And how can things shift in that fashion regarding the residency? Because I don't think that's over yet.
No.
I think that Jones was given a lot to work with thanks to some of Tuberville's Republican contenders there.
Yeah,
primary.
The disorganization of the Democrat Party in Alabama probably is going to keep Jones from being a major player in this race.
And then we had two local races yesterday in Baldwin County. You had the incumbent for District 95, Francis Hulk Jones, who advanced past Joe Freeman. And then for that Baldwin County Commission race, John Tater Harris over Brett Garr by about 10 points.
Tater, 823, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106. Dalton, ripe cucumber Orwig, and Dan Brennan in FM Talk 106.5.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5. I was going to give you the nickname Bell Pepper, and it just didn't come to me. That's where I ended up with the dumb cucumber line there.
Hope that doesn't stick.
I hope it does. Dalton Bell Pepper Orwig. I like it.
Well, I hope the cucumber nickname doesn't stick.
Oh.
Jeez.
You'll take Bell Pepper. 827 to the text line at 251-343-0106.
Yeah, and texter here said, this is a diehard Alabama fan concerning Governor Tuberville. I think he will be a common sense governor. Another texter, first chance I got to turn on the show, just passed by the church on Fort Morgan Road and only seen the Tater and Hulk signs, wondered if they won.
Yep.
I guess they can keep those up through November now. Well, she might not have to. I don't think Francis Hulk Jones has a
Democratic
competitor,
opponent.
Okay. And I don't know about in that commission race. I'll have to dive in on that. Jason said, I hope one of Tuberville's first moves will be cleaning house at Aldott. Yeah, you wonder how long the leadership at Aldott will be sticking around after Ivy's term ends.
Can't imagine that that's going to continue. So the Cooper was appointed like in 2010 or somewhere back there. I don't know how he became this.
So from
tyrant, quite, you know, slash czar of the roads.
02 to 08, he worked for a IT corporation in Huntsville. And then I'm trying to find the date. It sounds like it probably would have been right around then, 08 to 10, that he became.
Well,
2011, January of 2011, he became the Aldott director.
He became very comfortable on the throne, for sure. And, you know, He became the all-powerful one,
yeah.
And trying to get any road work done, pretty much an impossibility without him. It's not, you know how the Mystics took all those 2,000 opinions from people for the nickname and
the votes uniform, for the team name.
Right, all that. Like, he takes none of that. You can write him, but it's like writing Santa Claus. Good luck.
Yeah. Also, some questions about Iran, and we'll get to this here in the second half of the hour, and maybe that terror attack that was foiled.
Yeah, that's
a UFC
terrible
event. Texter said, question, whose $300 billion is going to Iran? Iran is set to receive broad financial incentives, including the right to sell oil immediately, access to a $300 billion development fund, and eventual access to frozen assets. Sounds like a major win for Iran and not America. That fund, the development fund, and I think J.D. Vance, I have some audio from him yesterday on his tour of the media, which started with The View yesterday.
I need to check some of that
where
out.
He talked about some of the specifics on that. I'll get to that, but it sounds like that's more of the Gulf Arab states going in and rebuilding Iran.
Yep.
And maybe that will, I don't know, put more of a tighter
unity.
Yeah, some unity on how to act regarding Iran. They're in the Middle East, and U.S. doesn't have to be as involved anymore. I don't know.
Yeah.
And another few texts about Iran. We'll get to those on the way next. I'll play some of that J.D. Vance audio. The view stuff was absolutely amazing to hear. More Mobile Mornings on the way.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
835 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on a Wednesday. And right now it's time to talk with our friend Louis Arata at McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louis, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are y'all?
Hey, we're doing just fine. Tell us what's going on at McConnell Automotive. I know you got a full lot there, great deals on trucks, and plenty of people coming by and taking a look at them.
That's right. We do. We've got a great selection of pre-owned and new. And you want to know what's going on here? The body shop. Mm. I think this rain's got a little people going cuckoo out there. We're having a bunch of wrecks, and I mean, it's just they're coming in there. The wrecks are coming into the body shop faster, and we're getting new cars from GM. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, that body shop, they're great. They're working hard, and I'm sure keeping up with the demand. And you keep them comfy back there in the heat too, which keeps them working.
That's right. You got to have air conditioning back there. We got air conditioning on both shops. So, I mean, it's just a great situation back there. They're all happy, and we got a bunch of work back there. And like I said, you had that unfortunate accident. Don't forget to call Rachel and them back there, 251-476-4141. They'll fix any make and models, and got a great place back there. And if you get that call to the car's total, hey, McConnellAutomotive.com. Mm-hmm. Best website in the world. Y'all check anything out online there and buy a car from us and be a part of the McConnell family.
Yeah, and it's a big family with all of your years.
Yes, sir, it is.
Servicing and serving here in Mobile. We appreciate your time this morning, Louie. Try to stay dry.
Hey, thank y'all. Be careful.
That's Louie Radup. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, too, McConnellAutomotive.com.
J.D. Vance, I guess part of what he's doing is not just representing the administration when he's on these conversations, but he's selling a book too.
Yeah, he has a book coming out. So he hit, and I'll probably miss some, but he had Hannity a couple nights ago. He talked with Tapper on CNN. Yesterday morning went on The View with those lovely, lovely ladies of The View. Believe it or not, there were some in the audience jeering J.D. Vance while he was on The View.
But I do believe it.
So he had that. He went on with Megyn Kelly, too, who's not exactly the 100% Trump supporter. And she's had a lot of twists and turns, hasn't she?
She's had a major twist here most recently, too.
Well, I mean, you go back to the Rosie O'Donnell comment when she was hosting that debate back for the 2016 race, right?
Yeah.
And then leaving Fox News and then making her way back into the public eye with a really popular show on Sirius or podcast. And so she's kind of not to the extremes that Candace Owens has gone regarding this whole Israel-Iran, the war situation. But she's certainly in that same camp as Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens as far as that goes.
Yes, yes. If you're in the camp with Candace Owens, you're going to raise some eyebrows.
Yeah, a little bit nowadays. So he went on with her, and then Texter just said J.D. Vance was on with Nora O'Donnell on CBS Mornings, and she asked him about the Epstein files and everything. He's really good against these left-wing reporters. Remember his debate against Waltz, against Tim Walz for that VP, where he just absolutely drubbed him on the debate stage.
Waltz said, look, there are people out there who are politicians. They are not leaders. They don't have they don't have qualities. They don't have the things that you really need as somebody that can lead a group, a state, a nation. J.D. Vance has those qualities, and so many politicians simply do not, and Walsh was way over his head.
And so yesterday, he, of course, fielded a lot of questions, Vance did, about the Epstein files, but also about this Iran deal, which hasn't been completely put out there yet. They're planning on signing it on Friday.
And, in Switzerland.
In Switzerland.
Yeah.
So we've gotten some texts.
It's the neutrality bowl.
Did you see yesterday how quote-unquote leaks started coming out? So Israel is obviously very...
They're not happy.
They're not happy with how this is all going down.
They're not happy the way this is going down. They feel a little disrespected. I mean, you know, we were arm in arm much of the war itself. But it did seem near the end things were, you know, with them and Hezbollah, and even with the rockets on Sunday morning itself really ticked Trump off big time. So there's been kind of a little split here.
And so there were a couple different leaks yesterday that came out, and I wonder how this is all played behind the scenes. First, you had reports coming out that, and these are all from unnamed officials, anonymous sources from the very heights of our U.S. government, and they were saying Trump is not happy with the members of his cabinet who wanted to continue this war with Iran, or some of those who maybe pushed him into the war with Iran. Mm-hmm. I think Israel made it sound like this was going to be a done deal, mm-hmm. like he could get in and get out, and that certainly ended up not being the case. But they started saying that Trump is looking at jettisoning some of the members of his cabinet who wanted to continue the war, and that would possibly include Hegseth and Rubio. Now, that was just an anonymously sourced report coming out on that. You also had some Epstein stuff where the Trump administration or members of the Trump administration, there was a report that came out yesterday. Actually, it was through the New York Times magazine, so not exactly a pro-Trump source there, where they determined after hours and hours and hours of investigation that it is very likely that Jeffrey Epstein did commit suicide in that jail cell. That's what the New York Times magazine came out with. So that would, in a way, you know, clear a lot of these conceptions about Trump. But there was also a report, and I saw it from this AF Post, America First Post, and they've got a huge Twitter following, and I don't know what they stand for as an actual news organization, but they had a report that came out that said, we're hearing from sources that Donald Trump had Jeffrey Epstein killed because had him killed in his jail cell because Epstein had such political, all this stuff that he used to blackmail so many people over the years that he was too dangerous, that he was going to use that against Trump. And for some reason, Trump had him killed for that.
What?
That's what they posted last night. Maybe I can find the exact post that they put up. But all of these different anonymous sources coming out, and you wonder why and why now. We're hearing a lot of this stuff, but
well, that's absolutely you should consider why and why now. These leaks, why and why now, for sure.
It looks like the AF Post deleted that after they put it up last night.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that,
it was so so
for everything about Donald Trump, he's not killing people.
Well, not. I mean,
I don't
believe the Iran war.
Well, okay. Well, that's that's a war. But I'm saying that, you know, the history of Donald Trump does not include mob hits. Whatever it includes,
yeah,
it doesn't include
having
that.
Epstein killed in a cell. So I don't know. You just have all these different things flying out there right now.
Epstein may have been killed in a cell by somebody or for whatever reasons. I would put Trump way back on the list of suspects on that one.
So, Vance, he had a lot of Epstein questions about this, but some of you on the text line were talking about this deal with Iran and that $300 billion redevelopment fund and what exactly that will look like. Are we just going to hand Iran pallets of cash like Obama did, like Trump said throughout his entire campaign, that it was such a bad deal, the JCPOA? All he had to do for this to come out as the winner was, I guess, come out with a better deal than Obama did. So Jake Tapper on CNN interviewing Vance asked about this, and here's what Vance had to say.
Their enriched stockpile of fuel is buried far below the earth, and we really have a two-way pathway to ensure the Iranians don't ever rebuild that capacity. On the one hand, if they try to rebuild it, they're never going to get the financial resources that they would need to rebuild a billions of dollars worth of nuclear program. On the other hand, if they're willing to commit to verifiable milestones and to make sure that we feel confident they're not going to rebuild that program, we're going to totally transform our relationship with Iran and Iran's relationship with the broader Middle East. So either way the United States wins, either way we ensure Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon, but we really prefer that they choose the option where there's greater economic cooperation and where they behave like a normal country and are treated like one as well.
You have said that the U.S. is willing to talk about unfreezing Iranian assets if the Iranians meet those benchmarks you've been discussing. Iran says that this deal unfreezes billions of dollars over 60 days of negotiations, and that many of the funds will be unfrozen before talks even begin. Is that true? What does the MOU specifically say about unfreezing assets or sanctions relief?
Yeah, so Jake, on the second point, that's definitely not true. There hasn't been a single dollar of sanctions relief or unfrozen assets, either from the United States or any of our allies in the Gulf. I've seen some misreporting about that. I don't know where it comes from. Where I suspect that it comes from, Jake, is what you're going to expect is that certain elements within the Iranian system, certain hardliners in particular, they're going to overemphasize, in an effort to sell it to certain domestic populations, they're going to overemphasize what Iran gets from the bargain without ever articulating the things that Iran has to give up in order to get those benefits. To be very clear, this agreement contemplates a very significant sanctions relief package for the Iranian people that transforms how they interact with the world and with the region. But they only get that benefit if they meet their obligations under the agreement. So I would caution everybody to be skeptical of what certain propaganda elements within the regime are saying. The truth is, there is a really big opportunity for the Iranians, but they only get the benefit of that opportunity if they do the things they promise they're going to do.
So that's some of Vance talking about what this deal may end up looking like. Meanwhile, you had Trump at the G7 yesterday, and what is his relationship looking like now with Benjamin Netanyahu and with the Israeli hardliners there as well? Here was part of...
And Netanyahu's got a... He's got an election coming up.
Mm-hmm.
He may not be president for long.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the possibility of that anyway.
That's part of the pressure on him are the people from within Israel who want to keep fighting and continue the fight against Hezbollah and Iran. Here was some of what Trump said at the G7. Let me turn it back up. Here is Trump.
And I'll tell you what, Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody, because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses, and they're not all Hezbollah, that I can tell you. And I suggested to Israel to let Syria take care of Hezbollah, because to be honest with you, I think they'd do a better job of doing it.
Meanwhile, after he said that, Syria went like, "Who, me? We're not planning on taking care of Hezbollah."
I was wondering about that when he put the ball in Syria's lap. They're like, were they anxious for that designation? I don't think so.
Some more pointed words from Trump on the Israel role in this whole thing.
Are you frustrated with Netanyahu, sir?
No. We have a great relationship. We're talking about some end details. I didn't like that he did an attack based on a... You know, there's a very minor little thing with some drones that were released, and he ends up doing a very... I saw that attack. I saw where that bomb went. Did you see what happened? That was too much. You know, you can do too much also. But we've had a very effective relationship. Without us, without the United States, there would be no Israel. Without me, there would be no Israel, because no other president was willing to do what I did. I've had a great relationship with Bibi, but now Bibi has to be more responsible with respect to Lebanon. Lebanon used to be a great country. It was a country where you had professors, doctors, lawyers. The great intellect was in Lebanon. Now it's terrible. I would say of all countries, they've been treated the worst. And they can't defend themselves. And they have Hezbollah, which is a problem for them. So, no, I'm not happy with the way Israel has handled themselves with Lebanon and with Hezbollah. They should have been able to do the job faster. It just goes on forever. And when that happens, it throws a negative light on the big deal, and that's the deal with Iran.
So, and remember, the whole big part of this deal with Iran, or one big part of it, is that Israel has to stop fighting in Lebanon.
Yeah.
If you want to believe the Iranians that they're going to abide by this deal anyway, which I think a vast majority of people don't think that's exactly what's going to happen. Mm. But is Israel, who have already said they're not leaving Lebanon, does this deal even go through just because of that? I don't think it. I think there's a high chance that we have another delay and more fighting going on.
Wow. That'd be disappointing. That'd be really disappointing. I was thinking also about Lebanon. I remember when I was young, you know, maybe up to high school age, Lebanon was still a very, very productive, educated Christian country. And I'm trying to think when that all turned historically. It might have been right around 1980 or somewhere around there. But yeah, sometimes you forget even Iran too, the past history of Iran and the Persian people, and basically you've got elements, Muslim elements in the Middle East that have really turned everything completely upside down. I do look forward to the day, I pray, that there is a much more moderate Middle East that is with the Arab nations and the Gulf nations willing and happy to do business with the United States. The one holdout, the biggest holdout, still seems to be Iran.
Yeah, yeah.
Obvious. And they affect everything.
Joel texting in, he said, they keep firing on Israel. Is Israel supposed to not freaking hit back? What is Trump thinking? Well, he said it was just non-proportional. He said,
yeah, that's right.
Minor drone attack, and then they level an apartment building.
Yep.
But Joel also said Trump better watch out or he's going to lose support from his own damn party. Well, that's the big story heading into midterms, right?
Going to talk with Jeff Poore, maybe these elections a little bit, to get his reaction to all that. He's on the way.
News, weather, traffic, and sports. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
Oh, yeah. Heck yes. It's 8:56 and Dalton's been quite a show. A lot of it centering around yesterday. And the 7.2% turnout in Mobile County. Way to go. Jeff Poore with the Jeff Poore Show is on. His show's on the way, and he's with us right now. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so have you seen any other statewide turnout numbers or Baldwin County? I imagine none of them were high or probably even average.
No, and I guess it might be already posted on Secretary of State's website, but I haven't gotten to this morning.
Okay.
Well, we know our winners now, and Barry Moore, an 11-point win over Jared Hudson. John Wall, another Trump-endorsed candidate, takes care of business against Wes Allen. Catherine Robertson takes the AG primary runoff, and that was over Jay Mitchell, of course. Locally, you had Francis Hulk Jones beating Freeman, and in that Baldwin County Commission race, Tater Harris over Brett Garr. How about Jim Ziegler destroying another incumbent for the Public Service Commission and heading back to Montgomery? What'd you make of yesterday?
I mean, I think we kind of expected, I said this all on my show, that we're going to have a hard conversation today about these polls and just how off they are. But it's ridiculous. And, I mean, you know, there were some polls there within a week that had Jared Hudson up 7 points. That's just... You know, today what we know now is absurd, and we can't use. I mean, I know that there are internal polls that are used for messaging purposes, but usually they try to keep them within a range. This was just totally out to lunch.
What do you think about the margin of victory for Wall over Wes Allen?
It's a little higher than I would have thought. To be honest,
it was a rout.
Yeah. But only by a few points, 3 or 4 points. I thought John Wall was probably going to pull that out. Same with Barry Moore. It's just like I kept saying this, guys. Barry Moore always underpolls. And guess what? He underpolled again yesterday. Well, it's just what happens.
Well, but you say the polls suck. They suck.
Yeah.
Well, it's not even that. Even if you, because some of these polls are just straight up messaging polls. But the polls that really tried to do it in a good faith effort got it totally wrong because they don't have the science down. They don't know the voter behavior enough to create a sample that's representative of the entire state.
Do you think the whole industry needs to be reworked from the ground up or what?
At least in Alabama, they got to do something here. But we're just, as an editor at 1819 News, we're going to stop taking some of these polls serious because they just put out bad data.
That's a big statement, actually. Who do you have coming up on the show today?
Well, Sam Roberts at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. We'll go over some of his polls. His were kind of close, but maybe not by the margins. Joey Clark as our Wednesday regular. Will Hampson make up for yesterday.
Jeff, thanks for spending time with us, Dan and Dalton.
Thank you for having me on.
8:59, Jeff Poore Show on the way, and Midday Mobile at noon. We'll be back tomorrow.